My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm still an alcoholic. This box you may have seen in the back of the room, it says on it, a newcomer asks. We have this box back there, a stack of 3x5 cards, and a couple of pens. And what we encourage you to do is any questions that you might have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, write them down on the card, stick them in this slot here, and I'm going to pull a card at random and attempt to answer that question using AA-approved literature and our panel of experts. We did have a question from last week. And the question was submitted by an anonymous member of our group. And the question was, at the time I thought it was facetious, it said, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. What is the speed of darkness? Then I thought about it and I actually came up with an answer. The speed of light is 164 pages and 12 steps, however long that takes. The speed of darkness depends entirely on when you pick up the first drink. If you never pick it up, darkness never comes. And we had a real question submitted this week. And we are going to have our esteemed member, Fred, answer that question.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Fred, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Thank you for all of you for coming tonight. The question is, how long does the jitters and the shakes take after detox? I heard it can take years, and the question was submitted by Sparrow. I'm pleased to announce that I suffered through the pains of jitters and withdrawals countless numbers of times, and I think that's probably why I was selected here tonight. And if that's the badge of honor I wear, then I'd be glad to be of service. For me, after a long binge drinking process, it was at least 3 days sitting over a bucket, shaking, baking, sweating, puking, and deathly ill and thinking I was going to die. That's how it was for me, and it got progressively worse. I believe that alcohol is the worst substance that we can place in our body, far more than many of the other drugs that are taking. We have a saying in the therapeutic counseling community that if you take an alcoholic, a heroin addict, a meth addict, cocaine addict, whomever, put them all in a room for 3 days with bread and water, and you close them in there, and after 3 days you come back and there's one person dead, it's the alcoholic from the withdrawals. It's a very deadly, deadly chemical, and it will kill you. The others will as well, obviously. Alcohol just depletes the system completely of all nutrition, vitamins, and especially potassium. So if you're recovering from an alcohol withdrawal, please eat some bananas and drink a lot of fluids. And most of all, call somebody. You need a supervised detox, preferably a medical detox. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. And now it is time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undefeated king of speaker meetings. This is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member since 1982. She has been a member of groups in Costa Mesa, Lake Elsinore, and Bakersfield. She has been in service as a secretary, GSR rep, sponsor, and 30 years in H&I. Her AA motto is, grateful people are happy people, and those that aren't, aren't. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Bakersfield, California, Sally C.
Anywhere without my bottle. I carry with me all the time my jug. Cranberry grape. My name's Sally and I'm an alcoholic. And I really am very grateful to be here. I met some people coming in. I met some women. Women are most precious to me. Oh, I wanted to share with you about my purse. Isn't that the weirdest thing? Look at that. Isn't that dynamite? Man. She used to be a sewing kit, and I found it in this store, and I said, I've got to have this for a purse. So, I do different things today to get attention, not like I used to have to do. I want to tell you that I brought my BFFFF with me. She just recently moved from Santa Rosa to Bakersfield, and I'm really grateful. She is, I tend to cry sometimes when I get grateful. So, if I start to cry, just know that's a grateful moment. Without her, my life would not have been what it is today. We hung around quite a bit back in the day, and then she had to go away for a few years, about 17, and get on with her life, and I had to get on with my life, and just recently we've just been brought back together, and I am so grateful because I would not be here had it not been for her, I want to tell you that, and that would be Mary Lou. I want to tell you that I, you know, when I first got this, you know what this is, really? It is. How'd you know that? I thought it was a fan. I've been using it as a fan all this time. It is a frisbee. I used to think it was great when I was going through the change. I used to tell people, oh, I'm going through the change. Isn't it great? Oh, tired of it now. I have a fan at every turn in my car, in my Bible, in my big book, and everywhere. In my book bag, I go to school. I wanted to tell you, I do go to school. I'm a college student. Now, I want to tell you about the Super Bowl of my life. The Super Bowl of my life was when I graduated a double major from Bakersfield College in 2010. And the reason I tell you that is the Super Bowl of my life because I couldn't, you'd think maybe it was when I got sober. That was a pretty good day, too. But the Super Bowl was when I was able to walk down the aisle with that black robe on and those colors on me hanging off, tassels hanging off. And I actually saw something that I had accomplished in life. And I am a double major at Bakersfield College, and that would be child development. I hate kids. And I know. And human services. And presently I'm at the University of Laverne working on my bachelor's degree in liberal studies. I want to be a second grade school teacher. I am not done growing. I'm not done getting, I'm not near old. I am pushing 60, let me tell you. I am pushing 60. And, but I think 60, I think age is a state of mind, isn't it? And I don't mind it. It really doesn't matter. I don't think. I am the mother of three grown children. I am the grandmother of seven grandkids from 10 till 20. And I wish I'd have had them first because they were so much more funner than their parents, let me tell you. Oh, I did not like their parents. If I would have known that they were going to be like they are, my grandkids, I would have been nicer to their parents. I would have been. Because some of those kids don't like to talk to me sometimes. But I know how to get their kids, and I get voted Nana of the Year every year. I ensure the vote. I buy the vote. And I'm not too proud to tell you that. It doesn't matter to me what I have to do to buy the vote. If they want it, they get it. And then they vote for me, and that's the way it is. A girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, you know? But it's always sober. It's always sober. I wasn't laughing so tough, you know. I wasn't feeling so great when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I was feeling pretty low. I remember I lived in Costa Mesa, and I remember when I called that central office down there in Santa Ana, and they said that, well, here's the number of a gal you can talk. And I said, no, wait. Don't hang up. I might not be able to. And they said, okay, then just hold on. Now I want to tell you, I've been to that central office, and in 1979 is when I first called AA. And I don't ever recall seeing a switchboard down there. I don't ever recall. I don't think they had call forwarding at that time. And I still to this day do not know how they connected me with that woman that was to be my sponsor for the next 4 years. But they connected me with her, and she asked me if I could not drink until she saw me the next day. She would meet me at a meeting, and I said, well, okay. She said, well, could you promise me? And I said, okay, I'll promise you. You know, I never had a problem telling other people, yes, I could do something for them, because I knew that would get them to like me better. But I had a tough time allowing myself to do or to be better for myself, because I was just not that important. So I met her the next day. I had to come from a court. I had just gotten bruised and battered from one of the husbands I had married. I've been married. I love men. I want to tell you that right off. But I love women, too. And women have saved it while the men have always tried to pat it, let me tell you. And it's been some time since I haven't had to get married. And I'm going to tell you that story as well. Since 1991, I have been able to stay single. I like it. I like it. It took me a little while to get used to it, but I do like it. I like it especially when I go do the wash and I don't have any boxers I have to fold up. I like it when I go to get something to eat and I don't have to put another plate out there, you know. Now, that may sound selfish and terrible, and I don't want it to sound like that, because let me tell you, I love you guys. I do. I am so glad God brought me into this world. I know that God brought men into this world to lift heavy stuff. I know that God brought me into this world because you guys, this world would not be going on. I see you out there working like dogs all the time, sweating, doing some hard work out there. I want you to know I really appreciate you. The women have saved my life in AA. Let me tell you, the women have absolutely saved me. I didn't like them when I first came here. I thought they were wanting something that I had. I didn't know I didn't have anything, but what I thought I had, I thought they wanted, and they were going to take it, and you know, they were going to do what I was already in motion doing, you know, and so that's why I didn't like women. I always try to make it a point to introduce myself to some women when I go to an AA meeting because of what women have done for me in my life, and it is up to me to pass that on to y'all, and that is to be able to look you in the eye and tell you, I'm really glad that you're here today. And I know what I felt like when people did that to me when I got sober. I couldn't look at them in the eye, because if you had done what I had done or felt what I felt, you just couldn't. And I remember at the end of that first meeting I went to, I remember they had to stand up and they held hands. And I remember going like this, trying not to hold their hands, because I just was so trash. I was worse than trash. I was nothing, and I was going nowhere. I'd come from nowhere, and I wasn't going to amount to anything. The very things I thought drinking and the booze would help get me going out of was what I felt like when I came to AA. And I have come a long way, baby. Let me tell you that much. My self-esteem is not anything like it was. And I get the opportunity on a daily basis to work with those who don't have the self-esteem in the measured place that I have it. And I value that opportunity every single day that I get it. Any day that I get to work with another human being, whether they're alcoholic or not, is an honor and a privilege for me. An absolute honor and a privilege. And sometimes I get to work with kids. You know, I've been in H&I for 30 years. And my most recent stint was 10 years at Tehachapi State Prison, and I would take people into that meeting, the meetings up there, and sometimes I'd go into the SHU, and the SHU is where they say that's the worst of the worst. Anybody been in prison in here? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand. That's all right. I know who you are. I know you. They say they're the worst of the worst, but I want to tell you, in 30 years of going in and out of the penitentiaries, I have never, ever had one person show me the slightest bit of disrespect, ever. And I've been in the SHU. I've been in Yard 4 with the lifers. I've been in Yard 1. I've been in Yard 2. I've been in Corcoran, Susanville, Patton State Hospital. I was comfortable there. I was. I've been in Camarillo. I've been in Tascadero. I've been in bat factories or prisons for 30 years, and they are my people. They are my people, and I tell you they're my people because they are us. They feel like we feel. They have done what we've done. And it is always a privilege and honor to be there and be able to talk with them. The thing with prison is that I can't go hug those guys in there, and I have a real tough time. So they have this thing where they grab opposite hands and hit shoulders, you know, and I started to do that, and they caught me doing that. They don't even let me do that. So no shoulder hugging or bumping or whatever you want to call it. I want to tell you that when I got sober in 1979, I didn't stay sober. I found it necessary to drink again at 30 days. Is it hot in here? Is it me? Now, that was not the right answer. The right answer, as my 16-year-old grandson would say, is, it's you, Nana. You are hot. So, anyway, I want to tell you that, you know, when I first came to AA, I did not know that there was going to be any kind of anything that I was going to have to do. I figured y'all were going to tell me how to tell those people how to treat me, because they weren't treating me really swift out there. And after all, if they really knew who I was and how I was inside, they would treat me better. So when I came to AA, and that's not at all what y'all were doing. What y'all were doing is telling me that I was going to have to get off my dead rear end, and I was going to have to work some steps and apply some principles in every area of my life, that I was going to have to get with some people that I had wronged, that I was going to have to go to them face to face, eyeball to eyeball, and tell them that I was sorry and ask if they could forgive me, and I couldn't ever use an excuse for any of my behavior. I couldn't tell them, well, I was drinking. If I hadn't been drinking, I wouldn't have done that. And I learned later, as I was sober, that I did the same thing sober that I did drunk, so I couldn't use that. That would have been lying, too. And I remember one time I committed welfare fraud, and I remember my sponsor told me she was going to go with me. And she says, you can't tell them that you're an alcoholic, Sally, and that's why you did it. And I said, but Nancy, I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't sober. It wasn't that much money anyway. What's the big deal? She looks at me. She says, Sally, any amount of money, it doesn't matter, $100 or $1. Theft is theft. And when you go to make an amends for this, you cannot tell them that you're an alcoholic. That I said, but I wouldn't have done it. She said, Sally, you did it even when you were sober. Well, I wasn't in my right mind. I didn't have all of the alcohol out of me, I told her. She said, it doesn't matter, Sally. So when we went to make this amends, she sat in this room, and I had to tell this woman what I did. It was around $700-some-odd back in 19... It was poor Christ, I know that. 77, something like that. And she says, and so I told her, and she just, her mouth dropped open. This woman, just her mouth dropped open. Now today they just cuff you and take you away. But back then, her mouth just dropped open and she said, what? And I looked at my sponsor, Nancy, I said, do I have to tell her this again? So I told her again and she said, I said, is something wrong? And she said, well, I just can't believe you're telling me this. You're the only person I've ever known that will come and tell me this. And I said, well, and I looked over at Nancy. She shakes her head no. I said, I just would like to, whatever it is that I could do to make this right is what I want to do. She said, could you hold on for just a moment? And I said, sure. So she went out. She brought her supervisor in. I said, I got to say it again? So she sat down and she said, would you tell her what you just told me? So I told her. And her mouth dropped open. And I said, I'm not sure what the problem is here. I just want to make it right. That's all I want to do. And so then she started carrying on a conversation with my sponsor, at which time my sponsor told her that I was in AA and that I was recovering, and this was part of the amends process for me, and that I wasn't going to get right and stay sober and try to get right with this situation. And they were both dumbfounded. And I'm telling you, you know what happened? That was my first taste of my favorite S word in the whole world. They call that freedom. My favorite F word. I'd be free. That was the first bit of massive free. It was just awesome. Just suddenly something come off of me. I really liked how that felt. So now I went on to make some other amends to my folks. And, you know, I had to go to my father. My father molested me when I was 8 years old, and I couldn't understand why I had to make an amends to him. I told my sponsor, and she said, Sally, she said, how have you been treating him all these years? I said, well, I treat him just exactly the way he deserves. She said, Sally, who are you? Who are you, God? Who are you to say who deserves what treatment? I said, but Nancy, I wouldn't have done this if he hadn't have done that. She said, Sally, we're not talking about his side of the street, are we? We're talking about your side of the street. Now, you want to get right with you or not? She said, I do. So after some working and praying and working some more and praying some more, I finally was able to make amends to my father. I made an amends to my father the way that I treated him. I never once did I mention anything that he did to me. It wasn't necessary. But I want to tell you, and I start crying when I tell this. I want to tell you, that was the first time I ever saw a man cry. And he sat there at that table and he cried like a baby. And he looked at me and he said, Pete, and he always used to call me Pete because I peed the bed when I was 15 years old. He said, Pete, he said, you haven't done anything that you need to apologize for. And he just sat there and he just cried. And I cried. And I knew. And I got some more of that F word again. That was it. It was no longer necessary. When I had made up my mind to go make my amends to him, it was no longer necessary that he tell me, I'm sorry for what I did to you. It was never necessary after that. And then when I got there, what happened between us was, it was incredible. I was grateful. My sponsor was a good woman. She taught me good stuff. Now I had to go make my amends to my mother. I threatened to kill her one time. She was going to cut my daughter's bangs, and I thought that she shouldn't do that. And that didn't work out real well, let me tell you. She didn't cut her bangs, and I didn't kill her, and I'm so glad. Because Alcoholics Anonymous, they gave me that mother. I didn't have a mother all my life. My father and mother split when I was young, and my father took us over to the Netherlands, and I was an Air Force brat. Come back when I'm 11 or 12, and my mother gets me a little bit. By then, I'm buried up with resentment because she didn't stand up and take me. I'm her daughter. Daughters need their mothers. I drank for years over that stuff. When I tried so hard through the years, so hard to be a daughter for her, but I just couldn't think of her in terms of a mother because it really wasn't her that had done anything for me. It was my father that did all that stuff, and I was caught. So it was Alcoholics Anonymous that opened my eyes to her. And one of the reasons I believe that Mary Lou had to go away out of my life so that I could get right with my mother, because I really believe that my relationship with Mary Lou was hindering my relationship with my mother and my mother's relationship with me. And it took a little while, but by the time I buried my mother in 1996, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me her for 13 years. And it was the best 13 years of my life. She was my best friend when she died, I want to tell you. I had the privilege and the honor to sit by her for the last 6 months that she lived. And I had gotten injured at work, and I was going back and forth from Bakersfield to the doctors, and back to my mom, and back to Bakersfield. I was on the 99th freeway more than I was at anybody's house. And I got to talk to her about a lot of things. And I remember her telling me the one thing I always wanted to know about, and I got information, but I don't remember so much about it, but I used to ask her about the change of life. I can't remember what she told me, though. I just can't remember. But I know that Alcoholics Anonymous led me to love my parents. I did, in spite of them. And you know, the way I could forgive my father was because my father is an alcoholic, too. One of the things my sponsor told me was, Sally, do you remember everything you did when you were drinking? And I said, well, no. And, well, then maybe your father doesn't remember. Maybe it isn't that your father doesn't know or is lying or BSing. Maybe he just doesn't remember. Do you think that's possible? I said, but that's my father, Nancy. She said, Sally, is it possible? I said, it's possible. She said, then that's where you're going to leave it at. Because if you need to hold him accountable for all his blackouts, then I'd have to hold you accountable for all of yours. I said, okay. So I made amends to my brothers. AA has turned me into the most awesome sister, I want to tell you. And I mostly think it is just what a sister would do, but I really am an awesome sister, you guys. I am. I'm here to tell you. My brother was on the liver transplant list, and I got to be his main support person. Anybody know about liver transplant list or transplant list? Well, he, we get one liver when we're sick, when we're born, and then we get another one, hopefully, if we do what we need to do. And then sometimes we get another liver. But my brother couldn't get to that other liver, and I had to bury him. But in the 3 years that I got to be his main support person, I learned about what my brother was like. And if I thought I had it bad, boy, he had it really tough. He's one of the reasons why I got involved in HMI. He's one of the reasons. You thought that was all me, didn't you? Psych. Some habits die hard, guys. Sorry. Anyway. I do that in prison sometimes, too. Those guys just roar. I'm telling you, they roar. I have a great time with those guys in prison. Anyway, I forgot what I was telling you. Oh, my brother Daryl. Yeah. So there's Tom and there's Daryl and there's me and there's Janie. And Daryl, I was in school before I graduated, and I had to take all these online classes because every time he went unconscious, I had to get in the car and go. For a year, I kept a suitcase packed in my car and a full tank of gas every day. And when I got a call, I got in the car and I left. I didn't care what time it was. I got up and left. If it was in bed, if I was in class, I told the teacher I got to go. I'd pack my bag up and I'd go. And sometimes he'd get choppered to San Francisco. Sometimes he was just taken by ambulance in someplace in Fresno or Clovis. Sometimes he was in Bakersfield with me. He was down there at a hospital. And I spent my time more in the hospitals than I did, I think, in college over those couple, two or three years with him. And I want to tell you that what he did is he gave me the ability to love another human being unconditionally. In spite of who he was and what he did, my brother spent 25 of the 40 years of his life in and out of prison, and he really plugged me into H&I. And I saw something in him that I wanted to know if I could help others overcome. And that's really why I got into H&I work, in prison work. And I wanted to, since I couldn't be with him, but I wanted to be able to touch him and his spirit through those people that I was touching, whether they be men or women. And in March 10th, they found my brother in his car. He'd been dead 3 days when they found him in Clovis. And it was a tough day when I heard that. He was due to get a liver that previous August, but they tested positive for methamphetamines. And just ripped me up. But I can tell you, the Alcoholics Anonymous came through one more time because I never not loved him because he did that. I never got mad and said, oh, you're out, throw you out with the trash. But see, in any room of Alcoholics Anonymous or any prison I've ever been in or any facility I've ever been in, any AA meeting, I've never seen any trash. I don't see any trash tonight. No matter how you're feeling about yourself, there is no trash in here tonight, kids. I'm going to tell you that right now. If you believe nothing else that I say, believe that. I believe it. You don't have to believe it yourself. Just believe that I believe it. So, that was really tough. So then, you know, the 3 years I was working with him, I got to know him better. So he opened a relationship up with his two daughters, and one daughter has six kids, and the other just has three kids, and I got to be an aunt, and I'm just so excited about that. I'm just so excited. And I go to visit them, and there's a relationship there that never was had it not been for him. So as I tell the kids, you know, let's look for the good and praise it. There is a reason why all of this came to be. I don't know that I've talked much about drinking tonight. I will tell you that I drank only for 10 years. I started drinking when I was 14 years old. I drank right after I got gang raped. And when I was 17, I was date raped. And I have a 40-year-old son. He's going to be 40 years old in January. And I have a 40-year-old son as a product of that rape. And so I want to tell you that I was always not in the best of places, but I never feared any place I ever went because I figured I could handle it. Mine, I was raised by a man and two brothers. What can't I handle? Well, there are some situations I just couldn't handle. And what it did is it stuck me in a place in my head that told me, one, I'm never going to measure up. Two, I'm not worth nothing. And anybody that really is ever going to want me won't want me the way I am if I'm broken. So I would just go and take anybody that would have me. And most of those people that I got involved with, those men, excuse me, they were, they used people as much as I used people. They lied as much as I lied, and they put on the dog. You know that honeymoon feeling? I know about that honeymoon feeling. That honeymoon feeling lasts, what, 3 months, 6 months, if we're lucky? You know what happens after the honeymoon feeling goes and everybody starts leaving the cap off the toothpaste and leaving the door open when you're going to the bathroom and all that other, you know, that stuff you do when the honeymoon's over. Well, you know what I did is I found myself putting my best foot forward trying to get whoever it was I was involved with at the time to like me the best because it was coming. It was coming. The real me. The real me was coming. And I wanted them to be ready for it. Because if I figured if I get them to like me a lot now, they wouldn't so much not like me so much they'd have to leave. But they always had to leave. And if they didn't leave, then I left. Because I couldn't stand them after their honeymoon feeling wore off, you know, when they weren't trying to impress me anymore. And I really thought that's what love was all about. If I'm trying to impress the heck out of you, I thought that's what love was. That thing in your stomach that you feel when there's the right song and the right man is in front of you and you're getting ready to kiss him and you think, oh, this is love. Honey, I'm telling you, girl, that's not love. That is not love. What that is that is a sick desire for me to get out of what I'm into and try to find some kind of okayness with another human being so that I don't have to look at anything else that's going on in my life. That's what that is for me. I don't know what it is for you. But I've been married 7 times. I knew I was going to hear it. I knew I was going to hear it. I didn't want to tell you. But I have to. And you know why I was married 7 times? Because I didn't want to get married 8 times. Oh, aren't I fun? You know, I was married 7 times because, no. I tell you, I was pretty sick. A lot of people tell me how sick I was, but you know what? I wasn't half as sick as the guys that were attracted to me. So go figure. It takes one to know one, huh? I don't recommend anyone do what I did. But you know what? I was caught in a dilemma is what it was. It was that I didn't want to live with them because I didn't want to commit a sin. See, I had this over thing over here about this Christian stuff. And if I live with them, I'm going to be a sinner, and I don't want to be a sinner, so I'll go marry him. I married to him for 3 months and get a divorce. That's okay. I didn't know it says once you're married, you have to stay married. I figured, you know. And if this don't work out, I'll just go find me somebody else. And that is exactly what I thought. And I did. That's what I did. And that doesn't include the people I lived with in between the guys I was married to. There's a whole heap full of them, let me tell you. A heap barrel of them. Oh, I was a sick cookie. I'm so grateful I don't have to do that. I haven't had to do that for a long time. So after about 14 years of separation, I was going to remarry my second husband, Peter Clausen. My name is Sally Clausen, and we were going to get remarried. And my daughters were getting ready to get out of high school. One daughter was, and she was pregnant. She does things like her mother. She had 3 months worth of birth control sitting on her dresser, and she goes out and gets pregnant just to get back at me. Yeah, she did too. That girl is 20 years old. That Brittany Ann, she was my first granddaughter, and she's the bomb. She has an attitude to match her mother, but she is the bomb. She's a beautiful girl, and I taught my children well. I taught them how to act by the example I set for them. And how else would they act? How else would she do? She did what she saw. I grew up and did what I saw. And, you know, when these 3 kids that I have, it was Alcoholics Anonymous that taught me how to love them. Because when I say I don't like kids, I hate kids. I don't hate kids. I do love kids, as long as they're somebody else's. I do love my kids, and I'm really glad when they moved out. I was really glad when they moved out. I do love them. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to love them. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to be there for them. Like when I was at work one day and this car pulled up to the kitchen. I was a food service manager for 25 years, helped build the homeless center in Bakersfield. And when I was, this car pulled up, and I looked out, and it's my son, Bill. And I said, hey, Bill, what are you doing? And he said something, motioned to me, and I couldn't. I had to do something. And I said, come on in. And I stepped back in the kitchen, and he comes in, and he says, Mom. And he looked wore out. He said, Mom, I got to talk to you. And I said, well, come on and talk to me. Bill, I'm doing this or whatever I was doing. And he said, No, I got to talk to you, Ma. And he got so sad, and his mouth started quivering like he was going to cry. And I said, honey, what's the matter? She said, come here, I got to talk to you, Mom. So we went outside and sat in the car. It was a car they had borrowed from a friend of his. And I said, Billy. And I looked at him, I said, are you hurt? And he said, no. And I said, have you hurt anyone? And he said, no. And I said, oh, we're going to get through this, honey. We're going to get through this. And this is what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. Gave me the ability to be cool in the face of disaster. I said, what's the matter, Bill? And he said, Mom, he said, I can't get off this dope. I just can't get off this dope, Mom. And I said, is that all? And he said, I mean it, Mom. I can't get off this dope. And I just gave him a hug. And inside I'm thinking, oh, dear God, what am I going to tell this kid? Please give me some words to tell him. Give me something to tell him. He's my son. And I'm just patting him on the back. And he's all right, Bill. And I get tears in my eyes. And I'm hugging him. He's crying. I said, it's okay, honey. And I said, I love you. And I'm real calm. And inside I'm just frantic. And then he sits up and I said, you know, Bill, I said, maybe it's time to go to a meeting. What do you think about going to an AA meeting? He said, well, you know what? I thought about all that AA meeting you've been shoving down my throat all these years. My kids were relatively lucky, let me tell you. Billy was 7 and Becky was 6 and Denise was 4 when I got sober. And they were relatively lucky to have AA, so much of AA in their life, or subjected to it anyway, so young in their life. Because I was a mess. I was a mess when they were young. And I was a mess even after I got into AA for a while, until I could learn how to do what I needed to do to grow, to envelop those steps in every fiber of my being, to envelop those steps in all of the principles that I thought I had. And what happened ultimately is that I had to cut loose of all that stuff I had, all those good ideas I thought I had, and I had to incorporate other ideas, and those were those 12 steps. I found a God in this program, a God that helped me be the parent I needed to be, that helped me be the grandparent that I was going to grow into be. It helped me to be the sponsor that I am today. It helped me to be, you know, I have a sponsor. She's 40 years sober today. I wanted to spend time with her, but you guys called me, I think, in January, didn't you? I got to tell you, I forgot. Tilly called me on Monday and reminded me. But that's nothing new, because I forget what I'm doing from the chair to the bathroom, so you know what I mean? I want to tell you that my life is so different than it ever used to be. I had nothing coming when I got here, and I have received everything. Everything far more than I could ever have imagined. I am a friend, and I know how to be a friend. I have friends in my life. I have people in my life that I can call, and people in my life can call me, and I am there. And you know what? My word is good today, kids. My word is good. I can't believe that. It's just, it's not something I don't know that I walk 6 miles to give back 6 cents, but I might walk two. I walk two. I have been given a way to walk in this life that allows me to look at you in the eye and like what I feel. Not because of anything you do and not because of anything I do. I've been given the ability to love another human being exactly the way they are and not have to want to change them to fit my needs. I have been given the ability to be a Nana that is just beyond comprehension, just beyond comprehension. I have been on the honor roll at Bakersfield College for, I think, 4 or 5 semesters of the however many years I've been going to school. When you get it, you get it. You know what I mean? And I have awesome people in my life that I am nothing without them. I am absolutely nothing without them. I want you to know that. One other thing I want you to know, and that is that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I honestly only thought you were going to tell me how I could tell those people out there how to treat me. And I have been given so much more. I have been given the keys to the kingdom, kids. The keys to the kingdom. If you have the keys to the kingdom, then you know what I'm talking about. You have a relationship with a God, with a higher power that absolutely measures second to nothing in this world. You have a relationship with a higher power that gets you out of any mess that you seem to get into. And after you quit getting yourself in all those messes, you're going to find such a degree of peace between ye and thee it's going to compare to nothing you ever thought of. I want to tell you, when I was taking my one-year cake in Costa Mesa, it was at Hope Hospital, in fact, I was taking my one-year chip, and I heard this girl talk, and she said, "My name is Lisa, and I'm 5 years old, and I'm not even 16 yet." And she was the youngest person I'd ever met in AA, until tonight when I got the privilege of meeting David. Our young people are the lifeblood. Our young people are the ones coming up, our newcomers. My book tells me that I am a newcomer if I am less than a year sober. So when I ask people, "Are you a newcomer?" and they say, "No, I've been around a while." Then I tell them, "Are you less than a year sober?" "I am." "Okay, that would make you a newcomer. I'm so glad to meet you." I know what that's like to be categorized something. When I drank, I sobered up, and then I drank, and then I sobered up, and then I drank again. I come back after 3.5 years, and people are asking me, and I'm caught between what I know, my experience sober, and my head knowledge, and what I actually am, a newcomer. I had a tough time. So what my friend Dennis Goy used to tell me is that it isn't about child, it's about childlike, not childish. So when I can act childlike, I can learn from you. And I try to do that every day. I try not to go into any situation thinking I know something more than the next guy, because it is then that I always find out how little I know. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love what it has given me. It has given me a life. It has given me the ability to look in the mirror and like what I feel. It has given me the opportunity. I joined a church just recently, and I know this is a spiritual program, but I have, you know, our book says that if we had the morning meditation, continue it. If we went to church, go back to our churches. So I found this church. 3 years I'm going to be a member. They're going to put my picture in the directory. I can't believe it. In the church directory. They're going to put my picture in there, and I get to be in charge of that food pantry there. It is an honor and a privilege. And every day, every Sunday, I show up, and I got everyone on the members bringing just one box of something every Sunday. And we've been able to put food in our pantry just because of one thing. I was so worried in the beginning of them bringing a whole bunch of stuff. Come on, how about $20 a month or $30 or whatever? Well, then I got to talk to my 10-year-old granddaughter, and she said, "Nana, what about if they just brought one thing? Like one, each classroom just bring one thing, you know, person." So this classroom brings cereal 1 month every Sunday, one box of cereal. And this classroom brings one can of vegetables, one person for the whole classroom. So we have our whole pantry stocked from a 10-year-old girl. Something I thought I was going to teach her. Yeah. Anyway. For you who are new, I hope that you stick around. And if you had to go back, and I heard somebody come up here and get a chip, says, "Well, I'm back again." Yeah, I'm back again, too. Now, I'll tell you, I was 3.5 years sober in 1982 when I decided to take another drink. And I'll be, I think, 29 on the 18th of October next week. I'm trying to time it so I could be here and have cake with y'all, but it didn't work out that way. So I want to tell you, for those of you who are retreads, you know, those tires that get retreaded, they go through the thing again, the process again. Give yourself every opportunity. And if you don't, if you come to a spot in your life where you think you are not worth it, give us a chance. Give us a chance to work on you. Find someone that has something that you want, and listen, and talk, and have a conversation. And that's how it all starts. Have a conversation with them. And great things will come to pass for you and countless others, you know? I thank you very much for inviting me here. I hope I have done what I needed to do here. And you guys are the bomb. Thanks.